originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer. You know him as Pope Jude or the Pontiff of the Pick Four. He is Jude Feld, and we are in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you tuning in coast to coast on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, and of course, all of you streaming us worldwide on our website. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net, and many of you tuning in to the podcast afterwards as well. Really appreciate you doing that, and appreciate you listening to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. JT, good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon. It's a lovely day in the bluegrass.
And as a former trainer, this is a show near and dear to your heart, and we've talked to trainers from various parts of the country, from various parts of the world, and tonight's guest has a really cool story that we're going to dive into.
Yeah, not only is he an international man, but he's new on the scene. He's having tremendous success early on, which I can relate to.
Yeah. Yeah, you started off like a house of fire, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It's a lot of fun when you're winning. but yeah, he's got an interesting story and looks like a bright career ahead.
He is a 34-year-old native of Winnipeg. Since 2009, he has trained 114 winners. But how about this? Through the first 44 days of 2019, he has sent out 10 starters, resulting in 6 wins and 2 second-place finishes. Think about that. 80% first or second this year. The moral of the story, do not leave his horses out of your exactas if you're betting the races in New York this winter. He is Rob Attriss, and he is with us now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, doing great. 80% first or secret, first or second. Let's get this out right now. What's the secret, my friend?
I don't think there's any secret. I think I fell into a fortunate situation. I picked up some decent horses. We put them all in, you know, very logical spots. Manny Franco and Junior Alvarado are riding lights out. They rode all the winners, and they rode them great. And I think that's pretty much, putting them in the right spot and getting fortunate trips and great rides.
Well, you had to have something to do with assembling your team. I mean, you're, of course, at the center, but, you know, you've got the right jockeys riding. I'm sure your staff is great. I know your wife helps you out. It's nice when everything falls together like that, but it's not really accidental. You had to have a big say in that outcome.
For sure. When I first started, January 1st is when I took over the remaining horses that were left here. I had two guys that I've been working with for 2 years, Braulio Fernandez and Rafael Achuga work with me. Braulio was a rider, and Rafael was my foreman with Robertino for about 3 years. They stayed with me, so it's nothing new to them and nothing, you know, new to me, you know, working with them. And we had the same kind of system. We knew what to do. And then my wife, Brittany, works with me, and she does pretty much everything. She rides, she takes care of the horses, helps groom, and just, you know, we all kind of work together as a team. And so far it's been working.
Yeah, Robertino Diodoro, you mentioned Robertino. He was on this program a couple of years back, and he, much like you, a native of Canada, and somebody who's had a lot of success training in his career. And now you talked about taking over the horses that he left when, I guess, he went to Oaklawn this winter, right? So you took over for him, and you're training at Aqueduct full-time.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Actually, I remember that show. I was at Remington Park at the time. I remember listening to the show when he was on with you guys.
He was a pretty good hockey player, if I recall, from that interview. Is that right?
I didn't, you know, we're from different parts in Canada, as far as I know, he had to make a choice between playing hockey and training horses. You know, he was a real good goaltender.
I guess you weren't a hockey player.
Actually, I was.
You were, okay.
I don't think I made it as far as him. I had a growth spurt when I was young, and, you know, by the time I was 17, 18, everyone caught up to me, and then I was the smallest guy in the team. So I went from scouts looking at me to, you know, playing fourth line and for junior, and then a couple separated shoulders later, and that was it for me.
It's like the
I became the youngest player in the old timers beer league.
Skate circles around those guys.
Yeah.
It's like the good 2-year old that doesn't get any better at 3, huh?
Yeah, right.
Outstanding. Let's go back to those early days, Rob, growing up in Winnipeg. You didn't necessarily come from a racing family, so to speak, but your mom had an interest in the sport. Take me back through the early days.
Yeah, you know, when I was young, my dad was with the police force, and he got moved around quite a bit until we did land in Oak Bank, which is just outside of Winnipeg. And my mom always had interest in horse racing and horses, and she owned a pieces of horses here and there. She did a little bit of riding and stuff like that. But she was basically the reason why I kind of got hooked onto the track, you know. So,
yeah, I had read somewhere that there's a win picture hanging on the wall of your home or her home that kind of represents your first trip to the racetrack.
Yeah, when I was in her stomach, yeah.
And you were in the winner's circle then, too. So your percentage is just unbelievable.
Yeah. My oldest daughter has one of those, and she's quite proud of it. She was basically born on the racetrack. So, yeah, it's great when you're young and you get into the sport early on, I think. I mean, I know my kids have loved it and love to participate. My son's a cameraman for TVG, he's loved the game his whole life. He used to come home full of poultice, helping the boys put bandages on when he was about 4 years old.
Wow. Yeah, it's a cool story.
That
it's great. It's great
when
you can.
Young, that was me. Yep.
Yeah, it's great when you can share it with your family like that too, isn't it?
For sure.
Oh yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really cool. Did your mom? Was she happy when you told her that you wanted to pursue a career in racing?
You know, I think she always kind of knew that I wanted to be around racing. Right out of high school, I took a job in a factory, and the first thing I did when I saved enough money was buy a racehorse. So I don't think they were too happy about that, but that was kind of And then I did try a year and a half of university, which my dad was happy about, but he wasn't too happy when one summer when the school was out, I went to the track and I never came back.
What is it about that? What is it about the track that just is the lure? Is it the animals for you? Is it the competitiveness? Is it the whole nine yards? What draws you to it?
That's a good question. I think just everything. I everything about it for me. I kind of grew up. I never grew up on the track, but I was such a racing fan from such a young age. I'd read any article and get to the track whenever I could, and I loved watching racing from anywhere. You know, anytime racing was on TV, which wasn't a lot, in the early 90s, there wasn't a lot of TV coverage, just, you know, NBC's on Saturdays or stuff like that. There was no TVG or anything like that that we were able to get. So I just, any opportunity for me to get to the track, whether it was watching the races or being in the barn, whatever I could do, I couldn't get enough of it ever since I can remember. I had some jobs on the front side when I was too young to work in the barn, legally anyway. And, you know, I took it all in. I kind of got to do a little bit of everything.
So. The racetrack up in Winnipeg, Rob, is that Assiniboia?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. How would you describe that racetrack for those of us who have never had the pleasure of going?
You know what? It's kind of a neat place. It's right at the very end of the city, at the very corner of the city. There's a lot of landscape there. There's a lot of land kind of spread out nice. It's spacious. There's, you know, it's like any older track. You know, the barns are a little bit run down. But as far as the track goes, it's nice, and they got a beautiful grandstand. They really do a good job there with that. Nice little telefeeders there, and it's kind of a cool little spot. I loved the place growing up. You know, I couldn't get enough of it. Like I said, I was always there, and then I ended up moving there.
Yeah, turf and dirt, or just a dirt track?
Just a dirt track. It's kind of neat because it's not really a bull ring, which some people would say a 5/8 track. It's actually 6.5 furlongs, so it's kind of got that mile feel. They got two chutes. They got a chute for a mile and an eighth, which is obviously two turn, and then they got the 6 furlong, which is one turn, 6 furlong chute. So the turns aren't quite as tight as you would see on like a 5 furlong track.
When you got enough money to buy that first racehorse, is that where you took him to Assiniboia?
Yeah, actually, yeah, we claimed a horse. I claimed a horse with a friend, and it was at Assiniboia Downs, yeah.
Did that horse do any good?
You know what? He did, actually, and then he got claimed back. His name was Eskimo Scout, and he went about three or four times, just kind of cheaper races, but then he got claimed, and I was devastated. And then right away I got another horse.
Well, Assiniboia Downs has kind of been in the spotlight this year with Escape Clause running at Santa Anita, winning a graded stakes, and that was really cool. But it's really neat that you were able to get a horse at a young age and you know, get into the sport. That had to like sew up the deal for you, right?
Yeah, no, that really kind of hooked me when I was able to own my own horse like that. And I think I was in university at the time and working some jobs, not necessarily on the track, but around the track. But it wasn't soon after that that I made the full thing to the racetrack. So
was it a good way to pick up girls? Want to see my horse run on Saturday?
Yeah.
Well, that is how you met your wife, Brittany, through the racetrack, right?
Yes, yep, right here at Belmont Park.
Okay. All right. How did that come about?
Actually, she worked for a veterinarian back here at Belmont, and he was my vet, Dr. Galvin, and we just run a race, and I guess she had come in, she was visiting her mom, and she was just kind of helping out Dr. Galvin a little bit she was going to do a short stint with him, I guess, and he introduced me to her on the wash rack, and then about 2 days later, I had a friend. We were out having a couple of drinks at the bar, and he said, "You should meet this girl." And I kind of put two and two together who it might be, and that was kind of our first real meeting. So
yeah, who doesn't meet their future wife on the wash rack?
Only if you're lucky.
And by the way, yeah, our HRN listeners will be familiar with her voice if they heard her on this program or any program, because she has filled in on Express Bet Radio with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, up in New York on occasion. So Brittany is somebody who I think is ultra talented. She's very, very good on radio and very, very bright girl. And all you have to do is take a look at her resume and see that she went through the Darley Flying Start program. And Rob, as you know, if you go through that program, you have to be pretty sharp.
Yeah, definitely. No, she's very racing oriented. She's very sharp. She knows pedigrees. She knows how to look at horses, and you know, you know, purchasing and sales. She's kind of done a little bit of everything, you know, kind of a different, she kind of took a different approach than I did to racing, you know, as far as the sales and the Darley Start program. But she's very sharp when it comes to anything to do with racing.
I want to know how you convinced somebody from Darley Flying Start to marry a trainer from Winnipeg.
Maybe I left that part out. No, I'm just kidding.
That's pretty good. Good accomplishment. Hall of Fame material, yeah. Right there.
Yeah, you know, and I read a story about one of your horses that is kind of a horse that is somewhat sentimental to you and to your wife, Brittany. Daria's Angel. Tell me about that horse and why that horse means a little something to you guys.
Well, actually, that horse had run on the day that we met, and that was kind of our first win together when we started to date and when we were together. That was one of the first wins we had, was with her. And I think she went 2 in a row, and then she got claimed, and Brittany was really upset. And and then they had her in racing for claiming price, I think it was October again. And I looked at her a couple times to claim her back, just because I liked the horse, and she was, you know, she's a nice filly. We liked her, and we got her back, and now she's win two for us, and she just ran second the other day, so she's really done well for us.
Yeah, cool story. And, visiting with trainer Rob Attras here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Rob, you had talked earlier about some of the other jobs that you had on the racetrack before you got into the training side of things. What other things did you do?
I worked when I was younger. I worked as the like a press box runner. I worked in the jocks room as the color guy. And I also did a season. I was the patrol judge, taking the inquiries and objections from the riders. And then on weekends and stuff like that, whenever I wasn't in school or working other jobs, I was always at the track, just, you know, doing stalls, whatever I could do. You know, just, I was kind of like a sponge. I was kind of soaking it all in and doing whatever I could, and watching. It was in Jack Robertson's barn where I got my start. And I just followed him around everywhere I could. He let me go anyway. So it was pretty cool.
Well, it's nice to have that background where you've done a little bit of everything on the track. You understand, you know, what goes on, the inner workings of being a racing official and stuff like that is invaluable, because eventually, you know, you do have to have some interaction with the stewards at times. And it's a good way to get a background in the sport, because there's really no place to go to school for it, right?
That's true. Yeah, no, there's no better education than that, than what I got anyway. I mean, it really worked for me. And I was just thinking, I remember when my mom she'd work weekdays, evenings, and weekends. She'd be working in the barn helping out Jack. And I was a little bit too young at the time, but I'd be in the backstretch kitchen. They'd show the races, and I'd sit there with some of the guys that were, you know, working the backstretch and watch the races. And my mom told me that's how I learned to read, was the racing form.
I want to ask you more about Jack in just a minute, but you mentioned one of those jobs that was the color guy in the jocks room. And there are people tuned in right now, Rob, that may not know exactly what that is, or that job even exists in this sport. Talk a little bit about what your job was there and that time in your life.
Yeah, no, that was I was actually the color man and the patrol judge. So what I would do is I just hand out all the silks to the riders, and then I'd go and you know, be the patrol judge for the race. Come back and just make sure all the silks were the right silks, were at the right rider, and everything got in the laundry after, and was, you know, was getting washed after the races. So that was basically what I did.
Yeah, I don't think people realize, like, at a lot of smaller racetracks, several people that work there wear many different hats during the day. You have to do the payroll's not huge at some smaller tracks, so you've got to do several jobs, and it keeps you on your toes. Certainly, lots
very
of things
true,
going on.
True. Yeah.
Did you tell those jockeys about the time that you were a kid and you would run around with the whip and the goggles, pretending to be a jockey?
they were the guys that were there. They were the same guys I was asking to get their autograph for a couple of years before that. So I'm sure they knew.
How many races did you win, or did you ever lose when you were running around there with the whip and the goggles?
Well, they're usually match races, so I never finished worse than second.
Much like you're doing now.
Yeah.
The guy just doesn't know how to lose.
That's good. That's a good attribute to have.
Yeah, it certainly is. If you are just joining us here on Trainer Talk, we are visiting with Rob Attriss here on the program, and we started the show by talking about the phenomenal hot streak that he's been on since going out on his own, taking over the horses that were left at Aqueduct by his mentor, Robertino Diodoro. He has saddled 10 horses in 2019. Six have won, two have finished second, so 8 out of 10 first or second. And I know that's a percentage that would make one of your other mentors, Jack Robertson, very happy. So let's go back to Jack for a minute. Tell me about working with Jack, and explain to our listeners who Jack is, because they may not be familiar with that name.
Yeah, Jack Robertson, he's from just outside of Winnipeg, Manitoba. He trained racehorses for, I want to say, at least 40 years. That's kind of how my mom got connected into the racing world, was through him. So he was kind of the first guy I got to any exposure as far as, you know, horses and, you know, doing stalls and tacking horses, all that kind of stuff. And he basically introduced me into the racing world via my mom. So he was like an old school style horseman, you know, which was, you know, really good, you know, kind of a, I wouldn't say a dying breed, but you know, he was definitely did things different than you see around a lot of tracks today. And I think it was just a, you know, tremendous education I got you know, growing up around him. So,
what's the biggest difference you see between a guy like him who was old school and the trainers nowadays?
That's a good question. I mean, we were at different tracks, different places, different times, so. I was still pretty young when I was working with him. You know, I owned my own horse and I groomed, so I didn't get too much exposure into the training part or that kind of stuff. But I worked for him, and then I went on to work for another guy named Albert Blake, and he was about 85 years old. So same kind of thing, you know, old school horseman. Very successful, you know, but I've been very fortunate to work for a lot of good horsemen, people that, you know, do things a little bit, you know, I don't want to keep saying old school, but they, you know, looking after the horses without using, you know, using a veterinarian or using medications, you know, like just, you know, using hard work and making the horses, or keeping the horses happy and healthy, you know, and that was kind of their number one thing, and so, and I think that's really important. And you know, just using ice, using bandages, using cold hose, you know, just stuff like that. But I mean, I'm here at Belmont Park, and you know, who doesn't know how to do that here? You know, that's you know, we're at the mecca of horse racing here. So I'm just fortunate to be able to get that education to work around those kind of people.
Yeah, it's important, and you know, I'm not 80 yet, but I'm fast approaching. You know, it's good to have those old school things and to learn the way to do things. You know, nowadays everybody's got a machine for this, or the veterinarian will give you some medicine for that. And you know, in the old days there wasn't a lot of that stuff around. I mean, you kind of had to be creative sometimes in treating horses. You know, you really had to be a horseman, a horse person, in order to get the most out of your animals. And I think experience like that with some of the older trainers is invaluable down the line, because you can't always depend that the veterinarian's going to be there when you need him or whatever. You need to know what to do, you know, until the vet gets there sometimes. And that, you learn that from those old school guys.
Very true. Yeah, very true.
Rob, how do you describe your approach to training horses?
Um, You know, working with Robertino, I was we had such a diverse stable. You know, we had the bottom level climbers, and we had top notch allowance horses. So that was really, really invaluable to me, because growing up at the smaller tracks and working with the cheaper horses, you really appreciate those horses, whether they were $3,000 claimers or $30,000 claimers. Robertino always treated all the horses like they were stake horses, so I think it really kind of helped me treat every horse as an individual, because every horse is on a different program, a different path, different level. So you really have to individualize the program to fit the horse. So there's no real set program. So that's kind of what we do.
Yeah. Do you have to train a stakes horse differently than a claiming horse?
You can say that, yeah. But at the same time, every kind of horse is different. Some horses, I think they respond well to a lot of trainings, and some don't, regardless of what level they're at. And everyone's got a different approach, and a lot of training can be lots of jogging or lots of galloping, or a lot of training can be breezing them every 5, 6, 7 days. So it's tough to really narrow it down to anything, really.
When you have a lot of horses at your disposal to work with every day, you learn so much. I mean, that's one of the great things. One of the things I enjoyed most about training was learning something new about the horses every day. And when you have a big stable like Robertino's stable, that far flung and many horses coming through it, there's so many things to learn every day. And that has to be a great value to you as you start your own career, having that background of seeing all these issues that horses have and their different horsenalities, so to speak, and what makes this horse run and what keeps that horse from doing his best and all of those things. It's like a gigantic package of knowledge that you acquire over time, and you've got the great benefit of starting out with that intact, already in action.
Definitely, yeah, definitely, yeah. When coming up from Oaklawn, the first year we came up to New York, we went looking at I always keep my training charts, and I was going through the training chart, and I looked, and we had in one calendar year we had over 100 different horses just where I was at my strings, not the other strings that Robertino has. So it's 100 different horses that we trained or we had in our barn. So yeah, you're right. It's a tremendous education and learning about each horse individual and just learning something new every day, which I still am. So it's great.
We're going to continue this visit with trainer Rob Attriss right after this short commercial break. Stay with us. Part 2 coming up next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Nominate now to the 2019 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old in Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FasigTipton.com.
Now standing at Buck Pond Farm, Bet on Red, Wildcat Red.
Wildcat Red runs away to an impressive score in the Hutchison.
After winning the Grade 3 Hutchison, Wildcat Red goes on to win the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth in near record time. Faster than Pulpit, faster than Thunder Gulch, and faster than 49er. Multiple graded stakes winner and Grade 1 performing millionaire, Wildcat Red. Also standing at Buck Pond, VE Day. After after winning three in a row at Belmont and Saratoga, VE Day wins the Grade 1 Traverse in one of the most exciting finishes in history with a speed rating of 112.
But here comes VE Day with a final try. Who will win the Traverse? It will be too close to call!
Major League Belmont and Saratoga talent, VE Day. For more information, contact Buck Pond Farm at www.buckpond.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
In the morning, I'm always looking for talent. With Always Dreaming, it was always about his athleticism. He's like a halfback. When he hit that hole, he exploded and hit another gear. In my experience, horses like Always Dreaming, they stamp their offspring with that ability. I'm racing with Bruno, and this breeding season, I'm Always Dreaming.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you back with us here on Sirius 219 XM 201 and streaming us and listening on podcast through our website at horseracingradio.net. We're going to continue our visit with trainer Rob Attriss here in just a moment, but do want to remind you that it is never too early to start talking about racing up at Woodbine. Major race dates that you can look forward to later this year include the Woodbine Oaks on June 8th, the Queen's Plate June 29th, the Woodbine Mile September 14th, and the Grade 1 Summer and Natalma Stakes coming up September 15th, and of course the Canadian International, which is also a Grade 1, on October 12th. Tickets for the two-day Queen's Plate Racing Festival are on sale now. Just visit woodbine.com/Queen's Plate. And Rob Attriss is with us here today. We're going to get back with Rob here in just a minute. We're going to actually reconnect with him here. I believe he has dropped off the line. So we'll get back with Rob here on Trainer Talk and get a chance to talk to him here in just a minute. JT, his story, growing up in Winnipeg and then going through everything that he went through as a young child, thinking about being a jockey and then working at the racetracks in different capacities, as you said, it goes miles in terms of helping him now because he understands how the other aspects of the game work.
Right. You know, when you start young like that, too, it's such a great advantage. You learn about the horses and you know what the game's all about and how to conduct yourself at the barn. You know, when you're young, you can get away with murder. But as you get older, you know, there's a certain decorum that people have around their stables, and they want to maintain that, and they want to, you know, be a nice place for the clients to visit and stuff. So when you learn that from the ground up, it makes your job so much easier as you get older and go through the paces and learning about the horses is the easy part because you're always close to them.
Yeah, and Rob did talk about learning from famed Winnipeg horseman Jack Robertson. He talked about Albert Blake, who he was around, who is, of course, no longer with us now. He also learned from guys like Robertino Diodoro and even Malcolm Pierce for a stint. So he has a lot of experience and now doing extremely well out on his own as well. Rob, back with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. And, you know, we left off the first half of the program talking about some of the different aspects of your training regimen and how you get horses ready and approach training horses. It's not quite the old school approach that some of your mentors had.
It's a little bit different, you know, dealing with so many different horses and, you know, right now, you know, claiming different horses, you know, we're taking horses, you know, that have been coming out of some really good barns and great trainers. So, you know, it can be really tough. You know, not necessarily you're not necessarily trying to improve horses all the time. You're just trying to maintain them and, you know, trying to keep them sharp and keep them fresh and happy.
Well, we talked in the first half of the show about Robertino going to Oaklawn for the winter and you staying at Aqueduct, taking over the training of his horses there. Why was this the right time to make that move for you and for your wife, Brittany?
You know, honestly, we weren't really sure what to do at the time. Robertino kind of presented the idea to me, asked me if I wanted to, you know, take over a few horses on my own. He had decided to leave New York for the time being, and basically I was staying here. I didn't really have a set plan, so I kind of thought about it for a couple of days, and I talked it over with Brittany, and I thought, you know what? What am I going to have an opportunity to train in New York again? So I thought I better take it and see how it goes.
Yeah, well, that was a good move, obviously, and you've started out on fire, which never hurts, and you know, it's great that you can do that. That was nice that you got that opportunity and seized it, because a lot of people, you know how tough the business is, and they're afraid to take that first step. But you'll never be in the Hall of Fame if you don't get out there and put yourself on the line. So I congratulate you for doing that. Sometimes it's hard when you know you're just starting out, but you've already made a name for yourself.
Yeah, you know, it. When I kind of weighed the pros and cons of it, it didn't seem like, you know, too much of a, I wouldn't say a risk, but I was familiar with the situation. You know, owners that had the horses in the barn, I had a, you know, a bit of a relationship with, talked to them on a, you know, a weekly basis. You know, got some of the guys that worked with me over the last couple of years, and you know, all the horses in the barn, I knew them as well. So you know, I kind of thought it wouldn't be a bad decision to try it and see how it goes. And, you know, obviously so far it started out good, and I just hope to keep it going.
Who are some of the horses that you have been around, whether it's with Robertino or some of the other trainers that you've worked with, that just stand out to you when you think back and you say, okay, I'll never forget that horse? Who are some of those horses?
My first horse that I ever really trained, and actually I got my first win with, was Dariamar. He was back in Winnipeg. We claimed him for, I think it was 4,000 or 5,000, and over three seasons we won about 13 races with him, and he's actually still up at the farm at Jack Robertson's place today. So that was definitely probably one of the most important horses I'd ever, you know, ever been around.
That's really cool that you still have them. That's great.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. But, you know, working with Robertino, we had a couple of years there in Oaklawn. We had some really, really nice horses, and probably the best horse I've ever been around and probably ever will be around is Subtle Indian. He was a really special horse to me. He was really cool. I really, really liked him. I really miss him. He was a stakes winner at Oaklawn. His career got cut short. He got injured, but he's, as far as I know, he's still at the farm in California at Mercedes Stable. So, you know.
What made him so special that he's one of those horses for you?
You know, he was a bit of a problem child when Robertino first had him. You know, he had some gait problems, and then he had an accident in the pool in Canterbury, and you know, he came to Oaklawn and he was three, and I kind of took to him right away. He just you know, he's a real cool horse, and he was training really, really good. And his first race he won, I think it might have been our first win at Oaklawn, so that might have been, you know, something to do with it. But it was, you know, ever since then, he's a real special horse. He came back the next year and won the Count Fleet Handicap, you know, among a few other allowance races and that. And he was just, he was so fast. He was one of those horses, he could go to the front in 22 and 44 and then have another gear or two left down the lane. So he was something.
a lot of talent. What horse have you had that you've done like a super excellent job with that maybe isn't a famous horse that people don't really know, but you know inside you did something great for that horse?
You know, we've had so many horses. I couldn't just, you know, pick one. I don't think we've had so many horses and claimed so many. And I know in Oakland, there's a lot of horses that we had that we claimed and did really well with. And, we had a really good program. And like I said, you know, we kind of treated all the horses. Didn't matter if they were, you know, 10 claimers or, you know, stake horses. They were all kind of treated the same. And I think some horses really, really took to that environment and then got good fast and you know, good care and, you know, good program can go a long way with some horses.
What do you look when you claim a horse? What kind of horse do you like to claim?
My favorite type of a horse is kind of like an old, maybe like a gelding with some back class, maybe lock form a little bit, but you know, you go back in the lines and you can see that he's, you know, he's run a lot higher level and, you know, that used to be my favorite type of horse to claim, but you know, ever since, you know, getting to Belmont, you know, there's, like I said before, there's just so many good horsemen and good trainers here. Those kind of horses, they're tough to resurrect. You know, these guys, they know what they're doing. And, you know, they ain't getting them back to form. Then, you know, a lot of times you can't. They're just, you know, they're slowing down. They become cheaper horses. But, you know, lately we've been looking at a lot kind of younger horses with conditions. You know, 3-year-olds, 2-year-olds that maybe started once or twice, show a little bit of ability. They're not going to be stake horses, but you know, maybe we have useful horses for us down the line. You know, some horses it takes a few starts for them to figure it out. So,
do you find yourself when you're looking to claim a horse? Do you find yourself looking at the person that's training that horse now and saying, okay, yeah, this might be a horse that I can work with and my style might fit this horse a little better than theirs and maybe even be able to improve the horse. Does that ever enter into it?
Sometimes, yeah. You know, other times you might look at a horse and you might say, you know, this horse is running for 30. Well, you know, this guy's training the horse, so if he thinks it's worth 30, we better, you know, give the guy respect. That's what the horse is probably worth. You know, he's not going to give away a putting the horse where he thinks it belongs, and he's a good trainer, so you know, maybe that's all the horse is. You know, we're not, you know, that's no big deal, so you know, kind of thing.
Rob Attris with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Rob, do you ever see yourself going to maybe some of the yearling sales or 2-year-old and training sales and selecting some horses for yourself there?
Well, if I did, I'd definitely be taking my wife Brittany with me.
She has a good eye for a horse?
Yeah, she does, and she's had exposure to that kind of stuff. She's been around the sales quite a bit, you know, looking at horses, buying horses with consigners and that, or with agents and that. So, you know, that'd be something new to me. That's one thing I haven't had a lot of experience with is, you know, looking at horses and, you know, yearlings and that kind of horse. You know, it's something I'd definitely be interested in doing and learning more about. Right now I don't necessarily have guys that are looking to, you know, pursue that avenue of acquiring horses, but in the future, you know, that'd be nice to get some nice young horses in the barn. That always helps.
Yeah, and you got the secret weapon. I mean, you know, Flying Start isn't just flying all over the world going to bars. There's a lot of work involved with being in Flying Start. And, and I'm sure she knows the sales inside and out because Darley spends a lot of time at the sales.
Yeah, she'd be a great asset to our guest here tonight, Rob Attris, when he does decide to go to the horse sales. But one thing that you mentioned, Rob, is the clientele. You have to have your owners have to be willing to get into the game at that level too, as opposed to taking the claiming route. So you have to have the right clientele too, right?
That's for sure, yeah. You need those kind of people that want to explore that avenue, yeah, for that route.
So when you start off red hot here in 2019, as we mentioned, 10 starters, 6 wins, 2 seconds, does a trainer's phone immediately start ringing off the hook and you start getting phone calls from owners that you never thought maybe you would?
You know what? I've had a few phone calls, a lot of people showing support, even a few other trainers and, happy that I'm off to a good start and that, and, a few guys have called me and, potential, new owners that, might want to claim a horse or send me a horse, down the line. So I've had a little bit of that, which is good. And I think probably for the most part, people are asking themselves, who the hell is this guy?
Well, it's nice to be the new face, and it's nice to have the early success like you're having, and I'm glad people are calling you, because sometimes it's not that way. Sometimes you get frustrated because you're doing well and people aren't calling you. It's kind of weird how that works. Yeah. So anyway, congratulations on that. That's good that people are calling and take advantage of every person calls you and follow up on the calls and get with them, because this business is tough, and the more horses you have, the better you can do.
For sure. Thank you.
Rob, what do you like most about being a horse trainer?
I really like getting up in the morning and coming down into the barn and just training. I really enjoy it. I like kind of setting a program for each horse and I really enjoy that. I really like looking into that condition book, setting a program, trying different training methods with different horses, and there's no better feeling than seeing good results from that. So that's probably the most thing. And connecting with the horses is good too. It's really nice right now just to have, a smaller barn, just to kind of take a step back and get to really know each of us, personality. And I really enjoy that too. So that's pretty much what I really like.
What time will you get to the barn in the morning?
5 and 5:30. Lately it's been, closer to 5, We like to get a pretty... not too early, but we get to the barn so we can get a good start and kind of go through all the horses before we start training.
All right, so what does that entail? Because there are people listening that don't know what a trainer does when they get to the barn in the morning. What do you mean go through all the horses?
Well, I think everyone just has a different routine, but for me, we get to the barn, Brittany and I, and we kind of go through all the horses and just check them all out. Who's eating what, and make sure all the feed tubs are empty, legs are clean, or the same way as we left them yesterday. We usually make the training list the day before, but we definitely make some changes if we need to, and then we like to hit the track at about 6 o'clock. So it kind of gives us an hour to kind of make any changes or any adjustments we need to make.
Earlier you talked about some of your assistants and the people that work with you now to help you and have helped you get off to this very fast start. But you have another one that you didn't mention that goes by the name of Gilbert. Tell me about Gilbert.
Yeah, he's our goat. He's our head of security. we picked him up in Arkansas and he made the trek up here to New York, and he hasn't left. So.
Well, there are a lot of barns that will have a goat around, but this one, Gilbert, sounds like he's kind of a member of the family and a member of the team. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, no, for sure. He's a character. He's funny. Like anytime a horse leaves the stall, especially if it's in the afternoon or later in the morning, if we're jogging horses on the road, or we're pulling one out to shoe, or look out in the wash rack or grass or something, Gilbert, he's the first one there, right behind the horse. One day he stood there and he watched every horse jog on the road. I jogged about 12 of them, and he just stood there. it's almost like he was watching over them and seeing.
Make any suggestions?
Yeah, next.
What leads a horse trainer to get a goat at the barn?
You know, I'd never had a goat in the barn, and we had a horse in Arkansas. His name was Tappan Vegas, and real nervous horse. And the racing manager suggested that we try, you know, putting a goat with him, see if he'd calm down. We got Gilbert. He was supposed to be horse broke and people broke, but he wasn't. But anyway, we got him settled down and put with Tappan Vegas there, and he wanted nothing to do with him. He just went over to the next stall. He said, that horse is too crazy for me.
Smartest goat in the world.
Yeah.
Did he become friends with the horse in the next stall?
Yeah, he actually did. Actually, the horse's name was Becker's Galaxy. And anytime that horse would leave the stall, he'd cry and cry until he came back.
Gilbert would cry?
Yeah, Gilbert would cry until the horse came back.
Who knew that this side of training existed, right?
Gilbert's high maintenance.
And in all seriousness, though, many barns will have goats, and the purpose is kind of like what you try to do with Tappan Vegas, is try to give that horse a companion and keep that horse calm, right?
Right. I mean, right now we don't have any specific horses. All our horses are pretty good, and maybe it's because of Gilbert. I'm not sure, but you know, he's kind of free range in the barn. He's never tied up. He never leaves the barn. He just walks up and down and lays with different horses. Sometimes he shares a meal with them, and everyone kind of gets along with him and kind of accepts him as part of the team. So,
cool. Do you take the goat home every night, or does he stay at the barn?
He's got a bed. He stays at the barn. He's the night watchman, so he's got to stay.
People flying out of that barn, they see Gilbert coming out.
Yeah. Quick, funny story. We claimed the horse today, and he got out. He got out of the stall at night, and we have a security system in the barn. So we went back to the time when the horse got out, and you could see the horse. He was scratching. He didn't mean to get out. He was scratching. The stall chain broke, and he got out. And on one of the other cameras, the other pan shot there, as soon as the horse broke through the stall, Gilbert jumped up and took off. It's kind of funny to watch.
Why the name Gilbert, or was he named when you bought him?
No, he wasn't, and I can't remember who named him. He got him when he was about 3 months old, and I can't remember exactly who named him, but it stuck. And I mean, he's like a dog. When you call his name, he'll come to you.
That's great.
Great stuff. Yeah. Rob Attriss here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Rob, outside of racing, you mentioned that you played some hockey for a while. What other interests or hobbies do you have?
You know what? I like to, you know, now I don't really have too much. It, you know, it kind of consumes your whole life, you know, racing. And this may sound funny, but when I'm not, you know, in the barn working or, you know, doing things pertaining to my own stable, I really enjoy just watching racing from anywhere, you know, whether it's Aqueduct or Gulfstream or Oaklawn. And the best way for me to relax would be go somewhere and, you know, sit down, have a meal or, you know, a cold beer and watch racing from somewhere. That's what I really like to do. I really enjoy it, everything about it.
Are you ever just sitting there having a beer and you take a look up at the TV and it's a claiming race and you think, huh, let me pull up the PPs real quick and see what I might be able to pick up here?
Yeah, right. No, it's... I really enjoy, you know, watching racing, and whether it's from here or anywhere. And other than that, you know, growing up, I played every sport there was. But after I kind of got full time racing, there wasn't really too much time for anything else. The odd night, Brittany and I will go to a Yankee game. I really really enjoy going to watch them play. Kind of got hooked on doing that. So that's kind of a neat thing we like to do once in a while when they're playing at home.
Yeah, that's a fun thing to do if you can afford it.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You need to find yourself a season box holder to train for. You might get a few spares once in a while.
Yeah, I've been trying to give Aaron Judge my number, but he won't take it.
Will you still follow some of the teams in Winnipeg, like the Blue Bombers in the CFL or the Winnipeg Jets in the NHL?
Yeah, I got plenty of friends back home, and they kind of keep me in the loop. But I don't follow sports as much as I used to. So I'm kind of just kind of full time horse racing. I'd rather follow the trainer or jockey standings at other various tracks around the country.
Yeah, well, it's amazing, Rob. This program has been going on, gosh, I guess about, 6 years ago, 6 years or so, right, Jude?
Yeah.
And it seems like every time we ask a trainer that question about what other hobbies they might have, some people will say golf or fishing or whatever it might be, but for the most part, almost every trainer says, you know, this is my life. This is what I do. This is what I like doing when I'm not at the racetrack. So you're not alone in that sentiment.
Right. No. I can see why.
Yeah. What's the goal moving forward? Where do you want to be a year from now, 2 years from now? Where do you guys see yourselves?
I'd really like to stay in New York and kind of have a successful stable. Like, obviously, I'd like to pick up, a few new, whether it's clients or just, more horses. And I'd like to stay here year round and just kind of have a good string of horses, some quality mix, nice diverse stable and stay here and do well, I guess. But that'd be something for me.
Yeah, well, the purses are excellent. The New York bred program, there's nothing like it. I mean, every New York bred seems to make $300,000. That's my standard line. So it's a great place to race, I can see why that's a goal, and it's not an easy goal, but it's one that's achievable, and I'm sure with your talent you won't have any problem doing that.
Yeah, and just being here, amongst all these, great trainers and horsemen, and every day you're learning something new, you're watching other people, and you're around such good horses, and you go to the paddock and you're amongst the top trainers, Chad Brown's here, Rudy Rodriguez, Christophe Lamont, Shug McGahee, Jason Service, all these trainers are just, they're top class. They're, world, and, looking at horses and then, the riders here, like it's unbelievable, it's growing up. This is where you want to, this is where I've always watched racing and always, probably never thought I'd or dreamed I'd ever be here, but here I am, taking a shot at it, and hopefully I can continue to stay here.
Well, Rob, it's been a lot of fun to hear your story, and congratulations on the extremely fast start. You and Brittany are making a tremendous team, and all the best moving forward. Really appreciate you visiting with us here on the program tonight.
Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, Rob Attriss here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, and you win 6 out of 10 to kick off your career. Jude, you know about fast starts, as you said at the top of the program. That helps.
Oh, no question about it. Makes people pick up their head and go, who is this guy? Now they know.
Yeah, now they know. Rob Attriss doing a tremendous job up there in New York, and again, alongside his wife, Brittany, and they really are moving in the right direction as they continue on here in 2019. Our thanks to our special guest, Rob Attriss. Our thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, and Jude Feld in our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Thanks for listening.